Louis said. A variable sword would do that. But a variable sword blade is a metal wire enclosed in a slaver stasis field. It cannot bend. This thread was in constant motion, as you saw. Something new, then. Something that cut like a variable sword. Light, thin, strong, beyond human skill. Something that stayed solid at temperatures where a natural substance would become a plasma. Something really new. But what was it doing in our way? Consider. We were passing between shadow squares when we hit something unidentified. Subsequently, we found a seemingly infinite length of thread, at a temperature comparable to the interior of a hot star. Obviously, we hit the thread. It retained the heat of impact. I surmised that it was strung between the shadow squares. Probably was, but why? We can only speculate. Consider, said Speaker to Animals. The Ringworld engineers used the shadow squares to provide intervals of night. To fulfill their purpose, the rectangles must occlude sunlight. They would fail if they drifted edge-on to the sun. The Ringworld engineers used their strange thread to join the rectangles together in a chain. They spun the chain at faster-than-orbital speed in order to put tension on the threads. The threads are taut. The rectangles are held flat to the ring. It made an odd picture. 20 shadow squares in a maypole dance, their edges joined by threads cut to lengths of 5 million miles. We need that thread, said Louis. There's no limit to what we could do with it. I had no way to bring it aboard, or to cut a length of it, for that matter. The puppeteer interposed. Our course may have been changed by the collision. Is there any way to determine if we will miss the ring world? Nobody could think of one. We may miss the ring, yet the collision may have taken too much of our momentum. We may fall forever in an elliptical orbit, lamented the puppeteer. Teela, your luck has played us false. She shrugged. I never told you I was a good luck charm. It was the hindmost who so misinformed me. Were he here now, I would have rude words for my arrogant fiancé. Dinner that night became a ritual. The crew of the Lyre took a last supper in the lounge. Teela Brown was hurtingly beautiful across the table, in a flowing, floating, black and tangerine garment that couldn't have weighed as much as an ounce. Behind her shoulder, the Ringworld was slowly swelling. Occasionally, Teela turned to watch it. They all did. But where Louis had to guess at the feelings of the aliens, in Teela he saw only eagerness. She felt it as he did. They would not miss the Ringworld. In his lovemaking that night, there was a ferocity that startled, then delighted her. So that's what fear does to you. I'll have to remember. He could not smile back. I keep thinking that this could be the last time. With anyone, he added to himself. Oh, Louis, we're in a general product's hull. Suppose the stasis field doesn't go on. The hull might survive the impact, but we'd be jelly. For Finnegal's sake, stop worrying. She ran her fingernails across his back, reaching around from both sides. He pulled her close so that she couldn't see his face. When she was deeply asleep, floating like a lovely dream between the sleeping plates, Louis left her. Exhausted, satiated, he lolled in a hot bathtub with a bulb of cold bourbon balanced on the rim. There had been pleasures to sample one more time. Baby blue with white streaks, navy blue with no details, the ring worlds spread across the sky. At first only the cloud cover showed detail. Storms, parallel streamers, woolly fleece, all diminutive. Growing. Then outlines of seas. The Ringworld was approximately half water. Nessus was in his couch, strapped down, curled protectively around himself. Speaker and Teela and Louis Wu strapped down and watching. Better watch this, Louis advised the puppeteer. Topography could be important later. Nessus obliged. One flat python head emerged to watch the impending landscape. Oceans, bent lightning forks of river, a string of mountains. No sign of life below. You'd have to be less than 1,000 miles up to see signs of civilization. The Ringworld went past, snatching Detail away almost before it could be recognized. Detail wasn't going to matter. It was being pulled from beneath them. They would strike unknown, unseen territory. Estimated intrinsic velocity of ship, 200 miles per second. Easily enough to carry them safely out of the system, had not the Ringworld intervened. The land rose up and sidewise, 770 miles per second sidewise. Slantwise, a salamander-shaped sea came at them, growing, underneath, gone. Suddenly, the landscape blazed violet. Discontinuity. Chapter 10. The Ring Floor. An instant of light, violet-white, flashbulb bright. 100 miles of atmosphere compressed in an instant to a star-hot cone of plasma slapped the liar hard across the nose. Louis blinked. Louis blinked, and they were down. He heard Tila's frustrated complaint, "Tonge, we missed it all." And the puppeteer's answer, "To witness titanic events is always dangerous, usually painful, and often fatal. Be grateful for the slaver stasis field, if not for your undependable luck." Louis heard these things and ignored them. He was horribly dizzy. His eyes tried to find a level. The sudden transition from terrible fall to stable ground would have been dizzying enough without the liar's attitude to make it worse. The liar was 35 degrees short of being exactly upside down. With her cabin gravity still working perfectly, she wore the landscape like a tilted hat. The sky was a high noon sky from Earth's temperate zone. The landscape was puzzling, shiny flat and translucent, with distant reddish-brown ridges. One would have to go outside to see it properly. Louis released his crash web and stood up. His balance was precarious, for his eyes and his inner ear disagreed on the direction of down. He took it slowly. Easy, no hurry. The emergency was over. He turned, and Tila was in the airlock. She was not wearing a pressure suit. The inner door was just closing. He bellowed, "Tila, you silly Lucato, come out of there!" Too late. She couldn't possibly have heard him through the closed hermetic seal. Louis sprang to the lockers. The air samplers on the liar's wing had been vaporized with the rest of the liar's external sensors. He would have to go out in a pressure suit and use the chest sensors to find out if the Ringworld's air could be breathed safely. Unless Tila collapsed and died before he could get out. Then he would know. The outer door was opening. Automatically, the internal gravity went off in the airlock. Tila Brown dropped headfirst through the open door, clutched frantically for a door jamb, had it for just long enough to change her angle of fall. She landed on her tail instead of her skull. Louis climbed into his pressure suit, zipped up the chest, donned the helmet, and closed the clamps. Outside and overhead, Tila was on her feet, rubbing herself where she had landed. She hadn't stopped breathing, thank Finnegal for his forbearance. Louis entered the lock. No point in checking his suit's air. He'd only be in the suit long enough for the instruments to tell him if he could breathe outside air. He remembered the tilt of the ship in time to grab at the jam as the airlock opened. As the cabin gravity went off, Louis swung around, hung by his hands for an instant, and dropped. His feet shot out from under him the moment they touched the ground. He landed hard on his gluteus maximi. The flat, grayish, translucent material beneath the ship was terribly slippery. Louis tried once to stand, then gave it up. Sitting, he examined the dials on his chest. His helmet spoke to him in speaker's burry voice.
"Louis."
"Yeah?"
"Is the air breathable?"
"Yeah, thin, though. Say a mile above sea level, Earth standard."
"Shall we come out?"
"Sure, but bring a line into the lock and tie it to something. Otherwise, we'll never get back up. Watch out when you get down. The surface is almost frictionless."
Tila was having no trouble with the slippery surface. She stood awkwardly, with her arms folded, waiting for Louis to quit fooling around and take off his helmet. He did.
"I have something to tell you," he said.
And he spoke rudely to her.
He spoke of the uncertainties in spectroanalysis of an atmosphere from 2 light-years away. He spoke of subtle poisons, metal compounds, and strange dusts, organic wastes and catalysts, which can poison an otherwise breathable atmosphere, and which can only be detected from an actual air sample. He spoke of criminal carelessness and culpable stupidity. He spoke of the unwisdom in volunteering one's services as a guinea pig. He said it all before the aliens could leave the airlock.